Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to you, Parkcast Park fans. We're your podcast for theme park fans. We're here every week talking about things that happen in the exciting world of theme parks, particularly in the UK. I'm Bex, and I am joined this week by someone who's a hot topic of conversation at the moment. He is the man behind the UK Theme Park Awards, Lawrence Roots. Welcome to Parkcast.
Thank you, Bex.
Oh, well, it's lovely to have you here. And I want to head this off at the start before anyone starts throwing accusations around. This podcast has been set up for quite a while. We knew we were going to have this chat. The nominations for the UK Theme Park Awards came out a couple of weeks ago. And much to my surprise, I can tell you, I found myself on the list of nominees for Theme Park Creator of the Year, which, as I've said on previous episodes of the podcast, I'm very, very grateful for to whoever nominated me for that. It was a massive surprise. But that is not the reason that you are on the podcast today. And I'm not trying to influence your vote in any way whatsoever. We wanted to get you on to talk about the Theme Park Awards, because obviously, as we do this podcast for fans of theme parks, it's the perfect place to talk about it. So there is nothing underlying going on, no scheming or anything like that. I'm just heading that off.
No bearing on the results.
It will have no bearing. I'm not going to win anyway. I've seen who else is up for the award, and I know my place. But as I said, very, very grateful to be nominated. And what an exciting time we're in. And the Theme Park Awards, to me, they seem to grow and grow every year. More and more people are talking about them every year, but they're your baby. You created these things. They didn't exist before you had this idea. So where are we going back to? Where did it come from?
Well, the story goes back a long way. So Theme Parks UK, which was my original baby, was born all the way back in 2000, the dawn of the internet.
Wow.
I'm that old. So back in 2000, I was a student and I was doing an IT qualification, and I needed to build a website for my qualification. I loved theme parks, big theme park enthusiast, loved visiting and enjoying rides and roller coasters. So I decided to build a website dedicated to theme parks in the UK, because this is going way back, way, way back in terms of the internet. Built that website over many years. And in 2020, that website reached its 20th anniversary, which to me was a really big deal. The fact that I managed to build and develop that website for 20 years. And I wanted to do something significant to mark that anniversary. So one of the things I looked at were award schemes, and I felt very passionately that the UK theme parks were not well represented in other industry awards, and people were very, very hard all year round creating and delivering visitor experiences at our UK-based theme parks. And I didn't feel that they were necessarily receiving the recognition that they deserve for that hard work and the commitment that they put in. So I decided, what can we do about this? Let's do something to mark 20 years of Theme Parks UK, but to introduce essentially an awards recognition scheme for the UK theme park industry. And that's really where the awards were born.
Oh, amazing. And I didn't actually realise you'd gone back that far with UK theme parks. And I was very much an enthusiast in that era as well. Okay. And I don't think people realise now, because there's so much theme park content available to us now. I mean, it's absolutely everywhere. And I always say it's almost mainstream to be a theme park fan now. Back then it wasn't. We were in our little corner of the internet and trying to find out information about new rides and attractions and what was being built and what planning permissions had gone in. It was a really difficult thing back then, and we had like internet forums. I talk about like Rideas, yes. Ultimate Roller Coaster, and the Coaster Club of Great Britain had a message forum as well, and that's where I used to get my information from. So for you to build a website then dedicated to theme parks, I think people have to appreciate how hard that was to put together. It wasn't easy to get all that information in one place.
Absolutely. And it was really my ambition to build like an independent consumer guide. So you could go to the official websites and read the marketing content that those individual parks would be putting out. But I wanted a place where people could go. They're thinking about visiting a theme park. They want to find out about the variety of different theme parks available, the differences between them, what might suit them, the different attractions aimed at different age groups, the different price points, to provide that kind of independent advice to help people make choices. So that was where it kind of all essentially started. And I think the Theme Park Awards are just an extension of that. Being able to say you are now nominated or shortlisted or winning an award in the UK Theme Park Awards is a stamp of credibility. You know, it's about saying the public, professional industry judges have said that this theme park or this experience at a particular park is of high quality and would be recommended. So, yeah, the awards seem like a very natural progression from running that website for so many years.
Did you struggle when you, in that first year where you said, yeah, we're going to do the awards, did you struggle for maybe the industry to take what you were trying to do seriously? Were they like, all right, you're doing some awards. Okay, yeah, nice, but it's not a big deal for us. Did you really have to like convince them that these were going to be taken seriously?
To some degree, although the timing helped. So 2020, you may remember, we were in amongst challenging times for COVID.
Yes.
And actually, the industry was kind of craving opportunities to engage audiences within their own homes in kind of a digital format. So, what we were able to do, so for the very first year of the awards in 2020, and again in 2021, because things were still challenging at that time, we ran them purely as a virtual awards event. So, people engaged entirely online. We had an awards ceremony of sorts with a presenter online, but it was a much smaller affair, a purely digital campaign. It gave parks an opportunity to get involved and participate, but it was something new and different that hadn't existed before. And it was almost sort of a dipping your toe in the water and going, okay, well, how is this going to work? How is this going to benefit me? How are our visitors going to feel about the award scheme? So I think by the time we got to 2022, when we actually organized the first in-person awards event, which was hosted at Drayton Manor, everyone was bought in. Everybody was
Yeah.
engaged. They could see this was supporting the industry. It was about kind of raising the profile of all of the theme parks in the UK. Yeah, it's been building and building ever since. And you know, you might have seen the kind of the scale of the event has grown every year.
Yes.
The
Yeah.
number of public votes has grown every year. The publicity in the mainstream media has grown every year. So we're on a really good trajectory at the moment.
Yeah. Was that quite daunting for you that first year you did an in-person event? I've been an events manager in my career. There's always a pressure when you've got the entire eyes of a certain industry on you. That must have been like quite a bit of additional pressure. Had you ever organized an event before, or are you like, okay, let's just do it?
So fortunately, my career is in experience development. So I'm used to designing and creating experiences. Part of that is designing and delivering events. So I've done a lot of event management in the past. This wasn't something that I just thought I'll have a go at. I was able to build on my professional experience of running events in the past. But you know, it's a new audience. Certainly. And in those early years, saying the team behind the UK Theme Park Awards, that first year, it's me, it's my partner, and my two brothers. That was the team running the UK Theme Park Awards, essentially roping in anybody that was able to kind of support and help deliver that first event. In terms of like the event production, I would be the person sat behind the stage controlling the mixing desk, turning the audio up and down. I'd be controlling the graphics coming up on the screen. One of my brothers was the photographer, so he'd be doing all the photography of people coming on off the stage. That first year was a real kind of team effort to put on the best event we possibly could do with limited resources, limited budget available. So yeah, I look back at it now and there's things I think, oh, I wish we hadn't done it that way or wish we could have had it that way. But it was that very, very first year. And I'm proud to see how it's developed past that point.
I mean, you have to start somewhere. You'd never done it before, like you said. And I guess now, like you say, it's grown. So do you have a production company who'd take that off your hands now, so you don't have to sit there pressing the buttons?
Absolutely. So we're starting to work with different partners who can help us with different parts of the event. So in terms of event production, a fantastic company called Tag Live, they now run essentially the on-screen and on-stream experience. Because one thing that's interesting about our awards and differentiates us from any other theme park industry awards globally is the fact that our awards are for the benefit of those in the room. So we have nominated theme parks, we have companies that obviously provide goods and services to those theme parks. We also have content creators. That's quite unusual. So the event is very much for those in the room, but it's also for the public. So we live stream the whole of the award ceremony to anybody that wants to watch it online. That's really unique, but that is a technical challenge. So certainly when it was a tiny team of four trying to do the entire kind of production in the room plus running a live stream, we were we were having to do an awful lot with very little, whereas now Tag Live have come in and they are experts at what they do, and they're able to do both of those things for us.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to seeing it with my own eyes in September, obviously at this year's awards, which are going to be at the Pleasure Beach in Blackpool, which itself is celebrating 130 years. So, yeah, what a perfect place to do it this year. And of course, that park is up for awards in several categories. But it's going to be tough competition. And I know from doing the podcast, when I've spoken to parks, especially some of the smaller parks, how seriously they take these awards, and they say to me, last year we won this award for this, and we want to make sure that we are keeping those standards. And they see getting a theme park award as sort of a clear confidence in them by the general public. It is a big thing. There's nothing else that's going to award them in that way.
Absolutely. It is unlike anything else. That's kind of why we established them, because it was a real gap where those parks weren't getting the recognition. And something we wanted to do from the very, very beginning is make sure these awards are recognizing the valuable contributions of every kind of theme park and amusement park in the UK. It's not just about the big global operators with multi-million pound budgets. We have designed an award scheme and essentially designed a voting and judging system that ensures there is representation across the UK's theme park industry. And you see awards of all shapes, sizes being nominated and coming away with awards on the day. And that's incredibly important to me. You have parks who potentially are working with much smaller teams, kind of much lower budgets, and they are delivering fantastic experiences for their visitors day in, day out. Or they are maybe putting together a marketing campaign, or they're running a social media channel, again, with far fewer resources than other operators. So we try to make sure that whether you're a large park delivering millions of visitors a year with big budgets, or whether you're a much smaller independent park, there is an opportunity for you to participate and be rewarded as part of these awards.
Yeah, I think you definitely see that. I think it was Black Gang Charting who were on with me a few weeks ago who said that they'd been nominated for the marketing award for their bins. And yeah, for them that was such a huge accolade to be up there, amongst much bigger parks, but it kind of leveled the playing field for them. And I think that's what's really nice. Who comes up with the categories? Is that you, or is there a team of you?
So it's me and a few others. We ask the judging panel to help every year. We actually ask the parks. So this year, going back to January, kind of February time, I was having conversations with as many of the parks in the UK as possible, getting their feedback on the awards, kind of what for them about the awards is working. Is there anything they would like to see us change or improve? And getting their suggestions for categories. So there's quite a number of categories in the awards this year, which have come directly from suggestions from the parks themselves. What I have to try and do every year is ensure there is some continuity and consistency from one year to another. There are certain awards which will probably never go anywhere. I mean, you're never not going to have theme park of the year, best customer service, best value. Like, these are real staples that feel kind of absolutely essential. But at the same time, I would never want the awards to feel predictable or stale. So we have to keep them fresh. So for that reason, this year you'll see, I think we've got 11 of the 22 categories are actually new categories this year. some of those categories might have been featured in the awards maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and they're kind of making a comeback because actually it's been long enough now that we haven't recognized those areas. It's an opportunity to bring them back. Some of the categories are completely new and we've never had them before, and it's just where a park has said, well, you know, actually, there's this aspect of the experience which we haven't really recognized before. Nobody's really kind of noticed that. That is a fundamental part of the experience. Best landscaped theme park, for instance, is one of those new categories this year where actually, when you go to a theme park and the grounds are well cared for, they're well presented, they're beautifully planted, the grass is mown, that contributes significantly to the overall experience at some parks where the kind of green outdoor element is part of it. And it's just not something that's been picked up in the awards before. So this year's the perfect chance to bring something like that in.
Yeah, and I think it's good to say to a park that that we do notice that as well. If they are putting the effort into their landscaping, it's like, yes, we do notice and we do see it. And I know I see it, and I know it makes a huge difference to my day out if I'm at a park and it's tidy and it's clean and it looks well kept. So yeah, I think that obviously works really well for them. One of the categories that I like for this year, I don't know if it was it won last year, Theme Park Personality of the Year. Now, this isn't content creators.
New,
This is people who work in the parks. And I love that because we do see a lot of them either on social media or through our visits to the parks. And so the fact that they are going to have the chance to be actually recognised for that, I love. We'll just go through who's up for this because I think as enthusiasts, we'll know all these names. So obviously, Amanda Thompson from the Pleasure Beach, Andy Highgate from the Pleasure Beach, who I saw last week, and he's so chuffed to be nominated for this. He's absolutely delighted. Howard from Alton Towers, Josh from Creeley, who was on the podcast just a few weeks ago, Laura from Black Gan Chine, who was on the podcast a few weeks ago, Lawrence from Portlands, who was on the. There's a running theme here. if you want to get nominated, come on the podcast. Lawrence from Portons, who was on last week. Mia from Wicksteed Park. I've seen her all over social doing some great stuff there. Norman from Adventure Coast in Southport. He's so passionate about that park. Philip Miller from Adventure Island and Ross Ballinger from Drayton Manor. They are really doing a job of trying to bring their parks to the public, aren't they? And they sell their parks so well. So I think it's great that they get the chance to be recognised.
It's an incredible lineup of nominees, and there's
Yeah.
more, there's many more. And it was good. So this category was one of my ideas. I was kind of like, there are people who, particularly online or maybe in person with guests, absolutely embody the brand. They embody their park. They you can see how much they care about their attraction and showcasing the best of it online or engaging their visitors on site. So when I had those calls going back to sort of January, February time this year, I sensed a few people out like, how would you feel if we went down this road? You know, is this going to be, is it going to be comfortable, uncomfortable? And actually, overwhelmingly, the positive was, is it might be a bit embarrassed, but this is a lovely thing to do, to bring some faces, because obviously you have lots of awards which are for a park or for an attraction or for a show, an event, but actually recognizing some of the individual people recognized as well. We've got to cover a couple of other categories which are kind of adjacent to that, and these are not public voted categories. These will be entirely voted for by the judging panel, but each of the parks earlier this year was given an opportunity to put forward two members of staff, one for an outstanding achievement, so maybe somebody that has given their career to their industry or working at their particular park, and also a rising star award. So maybe somebody that's actually much newer to their attraction, it might be their first job within the industry, but they're already showing massive potential that they could be a real kind of leader of the future maybe. So theme parks themselves have been putting forward individuals at their attractions for those two awards. They will be voted for by the judges, and they'll be awarded on the day as well. So as well as Theme Park Personality of the Year, we've got another couple of awards which are about recognizing individual people and the contributions that they've made.
Oh, that's lovely. And I didn't realize that there was categories that were just purely industry ones as well. So that's really nice that again that they're going to get that recognition. You mentioned the judging panel. How do you put this together? Because it is a bit of a who's who in the world of UK theme parks. You've obviously got industry people and theme park content creators who have been doing it for years and years and years. They're on the panel as well. So how does that get put together?
So putting the judging panel together is quite a task. It's quite an endeavor. What I'm trying to do every year is have a diverse judging panel that are representing different aspects of the industry. So exactly as you just described, there are people on that panel that are absolute industry stalwarts that have worked within the UK attraction space for many years. Some of them hold very senior leadership roles in kind of national associations, for instance. I'm trying to bring in a kind of a journalist edge. So there are people who are industry writers who contribute to trade media press or kind of industry press. Exciting new addition for the judging panel this year is Sue McMillan, who's the CEO of Mumsnet. So fantastic to have Mumsnet engaged with the awards this year, bringing in a kind of a new perspective from them as well. And as you say, we have got some content creators on that panel as well. Sean and Charlotte from Theme Park Worldwide, they're new to the judging panel this year. Challenge me to name another individual who visits as many theme parks in the
It's not
UK per
possible.
year as that pair. So in terms of that on the ground experience of visiting these parks day in, day out, seeing the experience develop and deliver, I think they're kind of a fantastic addition to the judging panel. It's about finding that mix. It can't be too many of one thing or too many of another. It needs to have that representation, bringing kind of different perspectives from within the industry, because then that pairs really nicely with the public vote itself, where obviously anybody can get involved and participate in that.
How does that work in terms of the balance of the split of the vote? Because that sounds like
So
a mathematical nightmare, like Eurovision.
it's funny you should say Eurovision. So I'm a big Eurovision fan.
Oh, are you?
I am indeed. And I will admit to shamelessly stealing the format of the Eurovision Song Contest when it comes to how we establish the winners in our awards. So very, very, very similar system. Essentially, we have obviously the public vote, and that's accounting for 50% of the final vote, and we have the judges' scores, and that's accounting for 50% of the public vote. All of those numbers come in. They are then ranked from essentially the park attractional person with the highest to the least votes, and then those two ranks are added together, and that decides our winners. And what is so fantastic about that format is it helps give us that really diverse range of winners across the award categories. If it was purely down to the public vote alone, or it was purely down to the judges' vote alone, you would get two very different sets of winners. So it's actually about bringing those two things together and combining them that means you get the results that we do. And I'm really happy with how that format works. For that reason, we've not really needed to change it since the first year, because it's delivering the set of results that I think is representative of the industry.
And when they come in, you're like, yeah, no, that's probably fair. It's interesting. I would love to see the difference in the actual like public vote versus the industry vote and see where the biggest disparity is. Where is it that industry really doesn't gel with what we as enthusiasts think? That would be fascinating for me. You can tell me afterwards, maybe after this year's vote. I just wonder what we prioritize that they don't so much. I think one of the things I like this year, this is a stalwart category. It has to be there every year, but best new attraction. I sort of had in my head that there wasn't an awful lot going on in UK theme parks this year, but actually when I look at the list, I'm like, it's actually a really busy year for UK
That's
theme
a good
parks.
word.
So we'll go through who's up for this because there's some big stuff in this list. Obviously Evictus at the Pleasure Beach, which I love and adore. Bluey the Ride at Alton Towers, which my daughter would say she loves and adores. My 5-year-old, she was chuffed to bits going on that this year. Chase's Mountain Mission, obviously World of Paw Patrol at Chessington. Draken at Poulton's, where I was just a couple of weeks ago. Fantastic. Fossil Falls at Roar. Pirates Plummet and Rota at Creeley. Creeley putting in two rides this year, showing us how it's done. Spinning Racer at Lightwater Valley. James Mellors was on just a couple of weeks ago telling us about that and how important that was to him to get that roller coaster into that theme park. Wild Swing at Portland's Park, which I was told how to pronounce by Lawrence. Again, another park putting in two new attractions just to show us all up. And Zuma's Hovercraft Adventure, also at World of Paw Patrol in Chessington. It's quite a diverse lineup. You've got some extreme thrill down to absolute family attractions. That's going to be really, I don't know how anyone's going to make a vote on that because that is so it really depends what you're prioritizing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And every year we have to think about, to ensure that the awards are fully representative of the kinds of nominees, the kinds of attractions, other ways that we can actually split the result. So you'll see in some of our categories in previous years, we might have maybe a large and a small. So it might be, a large park versus a small park, or a large investment versus a small investment. In Seaside Park, sometimes we've split the country across the middle and said, well, actually, let's have some winners from the north and let's have some winners from the south. So with that best new attraction category, it might be that actually there's going to be a thrill and a family winner. We haven't decided that yet. So yeah, it's always kind of interesting every year trying to work out what's the right configuration of options, what's the right way of splitting the categories to try and make sure there's as many things represented as possible. But it's a really competitive category this year, and you are
Yeah.
right. I think people thought, oh, maybe coming into 2026, maybe there's not that much going on, kind of, but actually there's loads and there's
Yeah.
lots of investment. And I think what we're seeing is investment not just from the big operators, so things like Bluey the Ride, World of Paw Patrol, fantastic high level investments from Merlin in IP kind of driven attractions. But then you've got smaller and medium theme parks who have invested a lot of money, so things like Creedy putting in two brand new rides in a
Yeah.
single year.
Yeah.
Fantastic to see that. And then obviously Mellor's Group taking over Lightwater Valley, really starting to put money into that park, changing things. And a shout out to Pleasurewood Hills as well. They've got new owners. I think they've
Yeah.
opened four new attractions this year.
Yeah.
So you're kind of seeing investment across the board in all kinds of attractions. Some brand new, some are repurposed, some are maybe acquired from another park and kind of rethemed. But for guests, it's a good year. It's a good year for new attractions.
There's a lot to go and get yourselves around. And you talk about that category split. Obviously, when it comes to best theme park, that is something that you've had to split. There is an overall best theme park or theme park of the
Yes.
year.
Yes.
But that would be very difficult because there are so many parks that offer such different experiences. So you do split that out into best for families, best for toddlers, best for thrills, and then, like you say, seaside and things like that. So there
Yeah.
is a chance for every park really to take home that a category, just depending on what their sort of specialism is.
Yeah, exactly that. Every park's got a different audience. They've got a different kind of makeup of rides and attractions. They're trying to achieve different things. Seaside parks feel incredibly distinctive. There's like a massive difference between a seaside park and some of the other parks. And then this year, we've extended the awards out slightly and incorporated some other attractions. So we've got Water Park of the Year and Scream Park of the Year. Massive overlap in terms of the audience of people that visit theme parks, but they will also definitely go to Scream Parks
Yeah.
kind of September or October time, and water parks throughout the year. So it's a great opportunity to kind of showcase some of those other experiences and give them a kind of a dedicated category within the awards.
Yeah, I noticed the Centre Parks Subtropical Swimming Paradise is up for Water Park of the Year. My personal favourite. There are many happy memories in those water parks. Well, Theme Park of the Year obviously is going to be the big category. It's like your number
Yeah.
one. I get close the event with that one. Who's it going to be? Who is up for it? Well, obviously Alton Towers Resort, Chessington World of Adventures, Creeley, Drayton Manor, Legoland Windsor, Lightwater Valley, Portons Park, Pleasure Beach Resort, Pleasurewood Hills, and Thorpe Park. I mean, they are the biggest theme parks in the country. It's going to be highly competitive. I'm sure, the fan vote, like you say, is 50% of that. But with the industry panel vote contributing to that as well, I couldn't tell you which way that's going to go. And I guess even you can't. I bet you're like, I've got no idea which way that's going to go this year.
I know, that's the beauty of it, really. It's exciting for me. I'm still as excited about the awards as I was when I established them. Every year, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how things are going to be perceived. Obviously, once the public vote opens and you've kind of got thousands of people online voting, I can see those numbers coming in real time. But again, like the Eurovision Song Contest, you think you can see the result, and you kind of go, oh, okay, this is who's going to win this. This is who is going to win. But then when you sweep in and bring in the judges' scores,
Yeah.
things can change. So even I have that excitement right up until the last moment when actually things have got to go into production and the awards event's coming up.
Yeah. And you don't tell them, I guess, before the actual award ceremony that they've won. It's a reveal on the day.
Yeah, they can't know before the day. It's got to be a surprise. It means, the excitement in the room is palpable. I mean, you can feel it of every category, because people genuinely don't know what they're going to come away with, if they're going to come away with anything. And the atmosphere in the room is so wonderful, because within this industry, people are supportive of one another. People want to see their industry friends, their colleagues, other attractions doing well. So even if they're not taking home a prize, people are incredibly pleased to see other parks taking home a prize. It's kind of, I don't know, it's got a lovely feel in the room. It's just a big old celebration. The awards come at the time of year where the summer holidays have just finished. People have worked their socks off all year through. It will have been hard, it would have been tiring, it would have been very hot. And it's an opportunity to celebrate the very best of the industry, to kind of to thank people for their contributions, and to have a bit of a party, to have fun, to enjoy yourselves, and kind of feel good about what is being created in the UK.
No, I'm really, really looking forward to it. The last category I want to talk about, because I have to, and this is where I want to make sure that there is no favoritism here, is of course Content Creator of the Year. So I want to give a shout out to everyone who's up for this category. Just like we know in the run up to a general election, you have to make sure everything is balanced and fair. That's what we're doing here. So
Exactly, nominees scrolling across the bottom of the
yeah,
screen, so
it's
people
not
are
just
aware that
me.
you're not the only option.
No, not at all. So we'll go through these. So we've got Amy and Mel, Attractions Beyond, Chessington Buzz, Coaster Chow, who I know is so pleased to be nominated this year, Coaster Tog, Dander's Theme Parks, Parkcast, who's heard of that? Apparently it's a great theme park podcast. Planet Park, Ride Comparisons, Theme Park Dash, Theme Park Kate, and Theme Park Roundup. We are all up for Content Creator of the Year. Now, the one question that I get, and you can probably answer this, is why is it in Content Creator of the Year you can't be nominated if you've won before?
So there's a change to the awards for this year. So going back to what I was saying earlier about wanting to keep the awards fresh, exciting, we don't want them to feel too predictable, too repetitive year on year. We've played around with the content creator category or categories almost every single year. It's all, I don't think it's ever actually stayed the same. So last year we had two content creator categories. We had best established content creator and best emerging. In previous years, we've actually had separate categories for, I think we had YouTube YouTuber of the year, I think
Okay.
we had Instagrammer of the year, we had TikToker of the year, possibly. So we've tried different things. So this is this year's format. So what we decided to do is say, well, actually, so far since we founded the awards, we have had 15 winners within whatever the content creator category or categories have been. We're going to pop all of those content creators in a hall of fame, and we're going to invite all of them to come and experience the event this year. We're taking the event to Blackpool. We've got a fantastic event space. There's plenty of room for everyone. So we thought, let's bring back all of those award-winning content creators from previous years, let them experience this year's biggest event ever, and let's give an opportunity for newer other content creators to get an opportunity at winning an award this year. So what that's done in terms of the nominees and the voting period, it's brought in some content creators you've never seen acknowledged within the awards before. So again, it's just in the spirit of keeping things fresh, keeping things different. It might not stay the same for next year. We'll take feedback. If people like that new format, it could continue. In theory, you could just keep adding one extra content creator to that Hall of Fame every single year and just keep building. We might go back and split it down. That's just the way that it's working this year.
Okay, well, that's cleared that up for anyone who's wondering or asking why they can't vote for some of the big names this year. But you can vote for me and anyone else, and we'll see who comes out on top of that. And there are some great creators in that list, creators who I watch every single day, who absolutely deserve to be rewarded for the hard work that they put into their theme park content. So yeah, very exciting for all of us, I think, to be nominated. And like you say, the awards this year are taking place at the Pleasure Beach. It's on the closing night of Hot Ice, isn't it? So we're all going to go and watch that
It's not accidental. The entire award,
after.
the entire awards event has been staged to coincide with that closing night. When we were thinking about places to host the awards this year, Blackpool Pleasure Beach has always been on that kind of list of, well, they're going to host it at some point, because the idea is that the awards continue to tour different venues. We've been to Drayton Manor, we've been to Thorpe Park, Chessington, Wicksteed Park. So at some point, it was going to go to Blackpool. It's about waiting for the right moment. Like, when's a really good opportunity to showcase a particular park and give them an opportunity to share their experience with the rest of the industry? This year, I think, as you said at the start, it's 130 years of Blackpool Pleasure Beach operating. That is an incredible, unmatched anniversary. It is also 90 years of ice shows at the Pleasure Beach. 90
It's
years.
crazy, isn't it?
It's crazy. So, with 130 years of the Pleasure Beach, plus 90 years of hot ice, plus the fact that they have just spent millions of pounds on a Victus, which is an incredible thrill ride. I absolutely love it. I think it's a fantastic attraction. When is there going to be a better time to take the UK Theme Park Awards to Blackpool Pleasure Beach? So that's where we're going this year. And because the Pleasure Beach is a large theme park resort with, on-site hotels, multiple different event spaces, it gives us the opportunity to do lots of things with the event and have kind of multiple elements to it. So, hot ice is essentially the finale to the day, 7 till 9. At the end of the day, after the awards, after the kind of partying, we've got that hot ice show to bring it all to a close, which I think is the best possible way, I think, to end the day.
Oh, I agree. I went to the opening night of Hot Ice just a few last week, and absolutely loved it. And I think, yeah, it's a great show in 2026. And yeah, what a perfect way to round off the awards and the Hot Ice season. Hot Ice's 90th season, rounding it all off together and really celebrating what's excellent about UK theme parks. And yeah, like you say, Evictus. Awesome. Just a point on that one. Regular listeners to the podcast will know he's a regular guest and a very good friend of mine, Glenn, who did the soundtrack. He has got a bone to pick with you. He wants to know why there's no soundtrack of the year category.
Minor, fair challenge. I'll take that one. I think we have had, somebody will correct me on this, I think we have had a soundtrack award before, but that's one of those categories that could easily come back, because essentially, if there's been enough new soundtracks composed since last time we had that award event, because we don't want the same set of winners again, that's not exciting for anybody. That could very much be making its way back onto the shortlist for 2027. So, no, thank you. Good suggestion. And I should say, anybody who is watching or listening to the podcast today, if you have suggestions for categories that you would like to see included in the awards in future years, just get in contact. It's info@ukthemeparkawards.com. Let us know your thoughts, give us your feedback. Very happy to take that into account in terms of planning for UK Theme Park Awards next year.
Oh, there you go. So that if you've got a bright idea for an award, definitely do that. And I will pass it back on. I mean, maybe you could just do a lifetime achievement award or something for him. Just keep him quiet, to be honest, because
Now duplicate him just for this year.
That'd be great. Lawrence, it's been lovely chatting to you about the awards. Now, the voting is open. It opened on Monday, so you can get logging on. Where do we need to go to place our votes? Obviously, I'm not voting for myself, but where would we need to go?
You would need to go to ukthemeparkawards.com. You just need to register, it only takes a couple of minutes, and then you can vote in as many or as few categories as you like. Some people will absolutely go through methodically all 22 categories, making sure they're voted in all, which is fantastic. But actually, if there's just a handful of awards or just one award that you really want to have your views known in, you can just vote in that, click through to the end, and submit your results. You don't need to vote in every single category if you don't want to.
Okay, so if you've just got a burning category that you really want to get a nomination in for, you can do that. And you've got until the 28th of August, is that right?
You have indeed. 28th of August is when the vote closes, and that gives us just enough time to get those winners calculated and get the awards produced ready for the 10th of September.
10th of September is when it's all happening at the Pleasure Beach. I will be there. I am travelling back from Saudi Arabia, especially to come. Not that that should influence anyone's vote. If you're listening to this podcast, let it influence your vote. And I'm really looking forward to seeing everyone else there as well. Because, like you say, that is just a great opportunity to see other people who are all love this crazy world of theme parks that we all are so passionate about. So yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing you there and seeing everyone else there as well. Before you go, I have one more question for you.
Okay.
Just gotta ride it.
This is Just Gotta Ride It, and it's the part of the podcast where whenever I have a guest on, I say, imagine a world where every roller coaster is about to get destroyed and you can only save one. You have been a theme park enthusiast for a long time. Which roller coaster are you going to protect with your life and save?
That is a tough question. What are you doing? I've ridden probably thousands of roller coasters across the world. But actually, the one I'm going to save, just because I've got a connection with it for some reason, is probably Nemesis, which is obviously now known as Nemesis Reborn Alton Towers. There is just something so special about the way that ride was built, designed, quarried into the rocks, with this incredible backstory that has kind of inspired other attractions. It's inspired shows, it's inspired fireworks, it's inspired its own reimagining. The entire ride has been rebuilt. I think there's just something so special about that ride that should just live on forever. Don't ever take that ride away from us. People should be able to enjoy that forever.
Well, it has been given a new lease of life, and hopefully, yeah, it will be with us for a very long time to come. But you've safely locked it away in that special box now, so it's protected from my imaginary scenario, at least. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode with Lawrence. Don't forget, you can vote in the UK Theme Park Awards right now. If you've enjoyed today's episode and you haven't subscribed already, hit that button, because I will be away for a couple of weeks, so you'll get a notification then when the next episode of Parkcast is released. And if you'd like to leave a review, you can do that as well. That always helps. For now, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.